Everybody here, I guess? Anybody on Skype, can you hear me and or see me?
Yeah.
Okay, good. No. Oh, well. So we can't see you, so if you have any questions, raising your hand won't help. All right, so just to remind you what we were doing, we are trying to calculate what this diagram does, and this gives us the vacuum polarization pi mu nu. We have this integral that we're trying to solve and regularize. Not even more. Right. One step we need is that we did last time is the Feynman reparameterization. And where I left off was that we were starting to do, I'm not copying this, are you? We did this last time. Anyway. So we're now doing a dimensional regularization. That is this integral over four dimensions over the momentum is divergent. And we want to do this in d dimensions and then take the basically calculate it in a number of dimensions where it does converge, and then continue that result to four dimensions. So last time I had some notational problems. This notation wasn't consistent. So what we're going to be using is we're going to replace integral of d4p. It's going to go to so anything with a tilde is in the in d minus four extra directions, and for the external momentum we set q tilde is equal to zero, so q is equal to q, mu, and zero, with mu the four directions. Okay. Generically, we're going to have integrals form okay, so this is where last time the factors of the powers of p were incorrect. So I checked it, and this is what it should be. And now we can start doing new stuff. First off, is there any questions about what we did so far? No. That's a crappy four. Okay, so what we're doing here is we're assuming that this integral to the first side only makes sense for d an integer, right? Because then we know what the dimension means. So we're going to, without proof, assume that we can do this for any arbitrary complex d. After, so we do the integral and then just take d to be, so it's going to depend on d. We're just going to take that as a parameter in the answer, and it's going to say it can be any complex number. It's sort of like analytic continuation, but not quite. Because in analytic continuation, you define a function on a domain, and here we only define it on points. So I don't know of any mathematically rigorous way to say that this is correct. So you just hold your nose, do your calculation, get an answer, and it turns out to work. So I don't have any proof why it works other than experiment says it's fine. Maybe Cliff has a different opinion on that. You can ask him that later. But that's as far as I know, that's how it works. All right. So the reason why we want to take D complex is that we'll always end up with some factors of Q to the power D. And that becomes E to the D log Q tilde. And so if D is complex, and this is going to be an oscillating function, and that damps the divergent behavior that we originally had. So that's why we can have a finite result if we have a complex D. All right. Now, who of you knows what a Wick rotation is? Hands, please. Most. Okay. So I'll do this quickly, so we're all on the same page, but I won't go into too much detail. So the integrals we're trying to solve is basically so this is generally the form of any integrals that you're going to find in a loop calculation. It's going to be some p squared to the power a, p squared plus a squared is usually a mass squared to the power b. And we're going to solve this for arbitrary a and b, so that for the rest of your life, you don't really have to calculate for loops anymore. You just look this formula up. Sorry? What?
Well, you just mentioned a little bit of continuation, defined function in the domain.
Right.
Here we are defined function of a point.
So the Wick rotation is actually in P, right? So we're going to change the integration over P naught from the real to the imaginary axis. So all momenta, P naught, P1, etc., they're all defined on the complex plane. Well, we usually only use them on the real line, but there's no reason why they can't be defined on the complex plane. The thing that's only defined on points is the dimension D. So when we're continuing in D, that's where it becomes mathematically a little dubious, maybe. Like, I don't think anybody can prove that it works other than saying it matches very well to the experiment. But the Wick rotation is continuation in P naught, which is just a complex variable. So that's actually rigorous. There's nothing special about that. Okay. All right. So the point with this integral is that what we want to integrate is in the complex plane So this is the P0 plane. We want to integrate along the real axis, in principle, here. And this, the denominator has poles at basically two points. And they're arbitrarily close if you want to take the limit of epsilon to zero, because in principle, there should not be an epsilon that's only there because we need to regularize it. If we want to take limit of epsilon going to zero, then we bring those poles right onto the axis where we're integrating. So that's problematic. So we want to do the integral in a different way where we can just take limit of epsilon to zero and we don't have a problem with the poles. Now, for this, we're going to use contour integration. So we want to integrate over this contour. Now, if you close the contour at infinity and go back down this way and close it again here, we have a closed contour with no poles included. So this entire thing together is zero. Right. So that means that integrating over the real axis from minus infinity to infinity has to be equal and opposite to integrating over this part down. So it's the same as going over this part up. So that means that this integral would be the same as this one, because at the circles at infinity, they contribute in the same. The only time that they contribute is when the integral is divergent anyway. So the statement that this goes to zero quick enough for the circles to not contribute is the same as the statement that the original integral converges. So whenever this integral has a reasonable answer, we can do this. And so then we're integrating over here, and that means that we're far away from the poles, so we can take the limit of epsilon to zero at the end of the calculation without running into problems. Effectively, what this means is that we basically replace P0 by IPV in our integral, and P squared becomes the Euclidean inner product. So that's basically just the square, the sum of all the squares. There's no negative metric anymore. Make clear what I'm talking about. This integral that we're trying to solve, I'm going to call alpha. Sorry? So if you go this way, so you're saying that if I do this integral, I should get minus IP?
No. Just to make the arrows.
Maybe I think IP is right. But, so basically, right. So you're integrating. If you're integrating along this contour, you get a total of zero, right?
Yeah.
So that means that this integral is opposite of this integral, right? So if you're doing this integral from infinity to minus infinity, and you just replace this by the complex coordinate, so you replace the coordinate here by the coordinate here, so that just gives you an I, right? But you're going in that is if you're going in this direction. So if you're going in this direction, you get a minus. But that's not the one that we want, right?
So we
want this integral because it's the same as this integral.
Yeah.
Because the opposite of this is canceling it in the contour. All right, so if we do this to that integral, then we get an I from the integration measure, from the DDP. And notice that I've removed the ix from here because it doesn't matter anymore. We're not integrating over a pole anymore. Because in this case, this is always positive. So you don't get anywhere near the poles anymore. So that's the whole point of this. So this is just again the sphere in D dimensions. I'm just using K here as the radial component of P. Because I hate writing absolute values everywhere, so I'm just changing it to K. So that doesn't mean anything in particular. Right, so rewrite that one more line. So we change the integration variable to k squared. And so the simple way to solve this integral is saying it's a beta function. And then you can look it up. So I'm going to be a little bit more explicit than that, but not by much, because in the notes there's a way of proving that statement that clearly misses a step somewhere. So I don't know what that step is, but what's in the notes here is inconsistent. So I'm just not going to do anything about that because I couldn't follow it. But it's not particularly important because it's a well-known special function. So if you go to Wolfram Alpha or Stegen or something like that, then you can just look up these properties. So basically the claim is that so you can express this in terms of these gamma functions. Sorry, 1 second. Where? Right, so the dk squared is 2k dk, right? So that's the other one half, basically. Right, so if you look up the beta function, then what you get is So it's pretty clear how to get from here to here, just t equals x over y, and pick the right numbers for a and b. So now we have a basically finite result for our integral. I don't think so. I think you only have to assume that it's not a pole of the gamma function, so it's not a negative integer. So this integral is defined through analytic continuation to the entire complex plane, except for when m or n is negative integers. So the integral would naively diverge, and then you define it through the beta function, which is this function everywhere, and it's coincides with the integral in the places where the integral converges. So the where the integral would diverge is defined through this through analytic continuation of this function. You mean through the entire calculation? So. I think that the beta function has several definitions, and I think there's also an integral from 0 to 1, but... access to one you're integrating over. So apparently no. So here's the final result for this integral. I would copy that down if I were you and keep it someplace safe, because every loop integral that you ever do is going to have this form. So you don't want to do this all the, over and over every time you see an integral like that. You just want to put it in and get your answer out. So, Michael, what you're saying, the things that we're continuing in here are A, B, and D, basically. So that's the powers here and the number of dimensions. All right, finally, to note, it's in general this converges unless the gamma functions are negative integers, then the gamma function has a pole. So when we take d to 4, this becomes a plus 2, and this b minus a minus 2. So particularly this one will often be at a pole. So then we've isolated what the divergent part is, namely the pole of the gamma function, and that's what renormalization takes care of. So we're going to be adding a counter term that has basically the behavior of a pole of the gamma function. Sorry? Where? Just in the final line. Let's see, so there's an a squared there. Right. So I guess this, right? Sorry? Oh, right, sorry. Thank you. Minus D. Like this? Sorry, it's hard to see all my formulas from too close up. Yeah. So m minus n plus 1, I'm just trying to. Yeah, and that there is plus 1, so it's not. Right. It's okay. Right. Shouldn't it just be this plus 2 then, if you just take it from? Sorry, what? Oh, right, it is the exact name. And an MR switch there. Sorry, that's too many formulas. Yeah, I agree. So next we're going to basically show that in this integral we want to shift the integration variable. So now we need to check whether in dimensional regularization this makes sense. And So are we going to use that? So k-tilde, yeah, k-tilde 0, so this only has, k only has four dimensional pieces because it's basically going to be an external momentum. So it's only the internal lines that we're adding this extra dimensional piece to. Oh, this is just so this is just not an integral we have. So here we have this p minus qx, right? Integrating over this whole thing's integrated over p, right? Because that's the thing that's learning in the loop. So we want to basically shift the integral d4p into p minus qx, right? Right. That we want to absorb into the p. So the question is, can we still do that even though we're changing what the number of dimensions of the integral is? Right, so this is an external momentum. So we're just going to consider this k here to be any external momentum and see if we can just shift that into p. I think I would be more happy to, let me see. Right. So I agree that should be. I'm just quickly checking if something else completely messes up if I just do that. So I agree with your statement there. Just want to make sure that I'm not going to mess up what I say next. Yeah, you're correct. It's not going to be relevant. It's going to disappear again in the next line anyway. So where is this? Okay, so that's a d minus 4. That's a d minus 4. And I think that's all of them, right? So, So now basically the idea is that in here we can just send p to this p plus k part, we can just absorb k in this integral, and it doesn't change anything here. So if you then do all trace all the steps back, you just get so this whole spherical symmetric factor is the same whether or not you shift the k in the four-dimensional part. So after the shift, you can just do those steps back, and you basically get exactly what you expected. You get just your original integral without the k. So you're doing this basically shows that because it's spherical symmetric in the extra dimension that you're added, you can just do this integral regardless of whether you shift k or not. So it's important that this k is zero in all of the extra dimensions. So it works only for external momenta. It wouldn't work for any other loop momenta that you have. Or at least then you'll have to work harder for it. Might still be possible, but okay. Right. So far, everybody happy with this? And if you're unhappy, all right, I'll take it. All right. All right. So now we're basically going to do all those things to the. To this integral over here that we actually want to have an answer of. So the added complication it's not actually going to be much of a complication to worry about here is that the gamma matrices are normally defined, well, you will know them in four dimensions, but they can be extended to arbitrary integer dimensions. So they just satisfy the same algebra. The anticommutator is equal to the metric. So so there's an extra factor here that was the So p tilde the tilde part, those are the extra really, you can say that because the integral that we're actually trying to solve is the one where there's no extra degrees of freedom, right? So they only appear in the loop, and so that means that if it would depend on anything not but the absolute value, then you're saying that there's a preferred direction in the degrees of freedom that you've added to make the loop converge. So unless you have a very good reason for that, generally it won't depend on that at all. Here you can see it because the integration variable p here, this only appears as p squared. So there could in principle also be, the whole thing is Lorentz invariant, right? Not Lorentz invariant, covariant. So the only things that can appear here is basically a terms of form p mu, p nu. They don't have any p tildes in it. And p squared, which is spherically symmetric in the x dimensions. Because anything else that would appear here would make this not Lorentz invariant in d dimensions. So, and the whole point of doing dimensional regularization is that you do not break the Lorentz symmetry. So yes, does that answer the question? Right, that's where I was. So this is mu to the 4 minus d. The reason this is there is because this e, we want to be the coupling in 4 dimensions. But if you would just write your Lagrangian in d dimensions, then this coupling constant has different dimensions, different units than it has in 4 dimensions. So that means that in order to keep this e the same thing that we want it to be, we have to add a factor with, so mu has units of mass, and so if you just write what your coupling constant has to be, this is the number of units of mass that you need to have in order for this to be the four-dimensional coupling constant. So you would just add in this factor with arbitrary mu that we don't have any physical interpretation for. At least at this point. It's the way that a cutoff scale essentially enters dimensional regularization. So this mu is basically the scale at which which for instance new physics enters the problem, or this for instance the scale at which you're looking at the scattering, that kind of thing. So you should expect some scale to come in, because you're still in a sense cutting off the integral, because you're taking the divergence integral and making it converge somehow, and that's why the scale comes in to the problem. All right. So here we're basically doing a trick that is Feynman parameters to make the denominator nicer. So the denominator is all scalars, so we can just take it out of the trace. slash plus q slash x. Yeah, I'm sorry, I hate this slash notation. It always looks like you're scratching out what you're doing. Yes, sorry. The I is only in front of the... Yes, it should be. Only in front of the momentum. So, so next, we can simplify this because the denominator is even under p goes to minus p, because it just depends on p squared. So anything that's odd under p goes to minus p in this part will automatically integrate to zero. So any odd powers of p here will integrate to zero. This is p squared, and this is q squared x of 1 minus x. Right, so we're doing the shift, right? And that's why the here you also get the x and the 1 minus x coming up here. So you have this p minus qx total squared. We redefine this, so this is what is called p in this integral, because it's a new integration variable. So we're going to use that that anything that has an odd number of p's is going to vanish, and furthermore that So this identity is so basically, if you take the trace, you say you get this vector of d here from the d dimensions, and since it has to be an even function, the only thing that we can get here is the part that depends on p squared. Anything that depends on some other combination will vanish because of it'll be odd under p to minus p. So this is the only even part of this that we can have. sorry? This, oh, you can see that by if you take the trace of this, so you contract it with 8 mu nu, and this, then this becomes p squared, and 8 mu nu contracted with itself. Oh. If you contract 8 mu nu with itself, then you get the dimensions of spacetime, right? Because you just get the trace of the matrix. So that's why you have to divide by d. So sorry. Yeah. So now we need to evaluate the traces for in order to get any further. Have you all seen how to do traces with direct matrices? Hands if you don't. All right. I'm just going to write them down and take them for granted. This is all we need because we don't have more than 4 anywhere. That's crap. and this tensor n is a little too long to keep on writing everywhere. Sorry? What? Here, this. It's P over 2, okay. Oh, right. I hate this handwriting. Right, actually. Apparently, there's another alpha there, which are, that's just stupid. That's what this means. So for even and odd. Okay. Then I do. for this, probably to. Yes, but this should be the same power. So d over 2 for even, d minus 1 over 2 for odd. I guess I'm going to have to call this alpha anyway, because it shows up here too. So now we're at the point where we can do a wick rotation, I think is next. Yes. sorry, in the notes here it says there's a condition q squared x times 1 minus x plus m squared is bigger than equal to something that's not on the page. So the copying didn't go over well. I'm guessing 0. The thing is that the question is whether the poles are in the correct quadrant. So remember that we had this story. Then if the poles are like this, then we can do this reputation like we did, but if they are the other way around, then this doesn't work. But the gist of it is that even if they're not, then we analytically continue to from a point where they are. Because this depends on basically the sign of this part. So there will always be some region for Q's and M's where the poles are correct. Now we can continue from continue from there to the actual value. Clearly way too small. So this is a crappy long formula that basically just amounts to inserting the result of did I erase that integral? The integral that we just did with that ends up in gamma functions. If you just plug that in to whatever we have here, then this is the result. We can simplify that. So there's properties of the gamma functions that we can use to simplify that. This is for any x is solved. It's basically the recursion relation of the gamma functions. What's here, this part? There is in these notes. Right, I see what you mean. Well, you would expect that to be another two. The final result, definitely, it shouldn't show up like this. Let's see. Right, so there's sorry, in which term? Here, top board. Right.
let's set x in the denominator.
So let's see the x over here. So, and that's also why this other problem is my other problem. So here you have this q mu q nu and q squared eta term. Here this term, if you integrate over x, can also become have a part that's q squared eta. So if it's still like this after we integrate over x, then we should get worried. But for now, it's fine. So I want to use this to get rid of this term over here. So the power of what were you saying? Clearly doesn't match. No, it's factor taken out, right? So, this one, a 2.
Right.
Which is exactly the power that is half copied. So that's why. All right. Yeah, that makes sense. So this part between the brackets, we're going to use this relation here. Then basically, you see that part of this and this will cancel. So we get indeed what you said before, the correct thing for gauge invariance. So this is. So if you contract this part, this with Q, Q mu, you get 0. So that means that there's no. Basically, it's still only 2 degrees of freedom. So it's still a gauge invariant quantity. So it doesn't, the gauge invariant doesn't get broken by the quantum corrections to the propagator. I think this is a good place to stop. Then let Cliff pick up from here with the actual regularization, with the renormalization. Is there any questions? Or did I miss up more? So this and this cancels, right? Sorry? Yeah, it should probably be plus between the two factors, right? Any other questions?